Welcome to the Seagull Eagle podcast. Two neighbours, two very different football loyalties. I'm Andy, lifelong Crystal Palace fan, and he's Neil, Brighton through and through. Seagulls and eagles, natural enemies on the pitch, but not over the garden fence. Each week we'll bring you match reviews, fan stories, trivia, transfer talk, and a few friendly digs at each other, all in good spirits though. But it's not just Palace and Brighton, we'll be giving our takes on the rest of the Premier League too. This is Seagull Eagle. Welcome everyone to episode 3, the show where two fan bases bond over mutual suffering and the occasional moment of misplaced hope. This week, it's been a cracker, if you enjoy emotional trauma. Palace kicked things off by getting destroyed by Newcastle, our defence folded like a deck chair in a hurricane. Brighton followed it up by losing to Brentford. Wins are so rare for Brighton these days, David Attenborough might need to document the next one. And just when you thought things couldn't get any more thrilling, the Palace-Bournemouth game was so boring that even the corner flags were begging for a substitution. But after all of that, we're still here. Thanks for tuning in and make sure you follow us on socials for more rants, reactions and questionable opinions. So let's get things going before someone concedes again. Neil, have you had a good week?
Why do you even bother asking? Honestly. It was perfectly okay until Saturday lunchtime. As always at the moment, it feels like a bit of a groundhog day, as I said in the last episode. But yeah, it is a little painful. I can't lie.
It's been a tough one for us both, mate, to be fair. I was reasonably smug for the first two episodes, and it's all gone downhill very, very quickly. However, we've got to be optimistic, right? This is what supporting a team such as ours is like these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I get depressed, I get annoyed, I get frustrated like any fan, I think, when you watch your team lose. But there is a moment that that sort of washes over me after about an hour or so of take perspective, understand where you've come from and where you are. And I know some people hate that idea, but I do. I do understand where Brighton have come from. And so, yeah, I always try and stay positive wherever I can.
You do that, mate. You do that. Well, shall we crack on then?
Oh, let's. I'm looking forward to the first match review.
Well, obviously, it was a double match week for Palace this week. We had a midweek game. I think it was Wednesday. Feels like a long time ago now, where it was Newcastle Palace, St James's Park. Going into this game, Palace had only suffered one defeat in their last 11 matches. And there were two changes made to the starting lineup. We brought in Gay back from his suspension, and Will Hughes was in the place of Wharton. Newcastle were unchanged, as they normally are.
Yeah.
With five straight wins on the back. It wasn't looking good before we went into this. My observations of the game, Neil. As soon as the game kicked off, it was obvious that this wasn't going to be an easy day out for Palace. I genuinely feel sorry for the travelling fans that went up there. That's a hell of a long way to go and watch that. There were signs in the early days of end-to-end play and glimpses that we might be able to catch them on the break at points.
Yeah.
After 7 minutes, Henderson made a really, really good save from Isak. And then at the other end, Chris Richards nearly repeated that identical header from the previous week at Man City, but he just couldn't keep it down. Then came the goal from Murphy. And did you see that goal? That ridiculous angle where everyone watching it thought it was a cross until they realised that he actually meant that.
It was unbelievable. Honestly.
No stopping that.
Oh, it was such a good finish.
And then we tried to get back into the game. We had periods of dominance. Nick Pope's flying right hook on Richards. Did you see that one?
Oh, it was a fantastic stop.
What, to his head?
Yeah.
I mean, it took a long time to get awarded, but looking at it at the right angle, he got him good there. He really got him good there. And do you know what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you?
Go on.
Is not talk too much about the five goals that we conceded.
Are you kidding?
No.
It's the only joy I have this week.
I mean, it's all in the past, and we don't like to talk about the past. We like to talk about the future.
Really?
But what I would like to talk about is some of the points in the game, because I think that's what we're going to get out of this.
Okay.
And one of the biggest talking points for me was the penalty. Now, Eze stepped up.
to take the penalty, looking very confident with himself.
Yeah.
And that penalty was like watching a squirrel trying to parallel park a bus. Lots of effort and zero accuracy. It was awful. I've seen better aim from toddlers throwing spaghetti. What was he doing? I mean, like, it was so embarrassing. And I don't like to publicly call out people because he's contributed a lot to the club. But I think the point that I'm trying to make here, and maybe you can relate to this, I don't know, but elaborate penalties, for me, they're like a vanity project. It's not about how it goes in. It's about the fact that it goes in. And more these days, players are trying to outdo each other with the elaborate way that they're scoring these penalties, as opposed to banging it in.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, there's been a few recently. I mean, I think ultimately, when you see these types of penalties where they're trying to be, well, old-fashioned people would say they're trying to be fancy.
Yeah.
But it's a legitimate way to try and score a goal because they expect the goalkeeper to dive in a certain way. The issue with it, it's a high risk. You know, it's a high risk penalty because the technique needed, you can't always rely, as we saw in this match, you can't always rely on hitting it perfectly every time with that type of finish. And yeah, it was...
it was awful. It was so bad. And I really felt for him because obviously, look, we all know that Ezra didn't mean to do that, right? And obviously we should have all been celebrating and you know, shouting his name. I did say to Harry, my son, when we were watching it, like, stood there in front of that goal with Nick Pope in front of you, like, he's a big lad and that is reasonably intimidating. So you can see why, you know, Nick Pope is a reasonably successful goalkeeper. Anyway, that was the penalty. Moving on now, I think, look, Newcastle were the superior side from that point on, and Palace looked shaky, understandably, coming in from our last game. And we looked far from solid at the back, which is unlike us. Then came the second goal, and here comes the next talking point. Mark Gaye.
Yeah.
Got a really good rep at our club and England, right? Yeah. So he's moved Harry Maguire out of that kind of spot in the England lineup as well. He's doing really well for himself. He was linked with, I believe it was about an £80 million move to Newcastle not long ago, actually. And some might start to think that he actually may have already made that move.
Wow, that's harsh.
Well, look, there's a reason that I've said that, because he's managed, believe it or not, to get on the score sheet in both games against Newcastle this season. Unfortunately, both own goals. It's just the second time that a player has done this, both home and away, with a single opponent in a campaign. So after being absent for that Man City disaster, shipping five goals in without him, do you remember at the end of that review, I said, you know, part of that reason potentially was because Gaye wasn't around, yeah, he was suspended and all that. Well, it would seem that I might have been talking rubbish, because even with Gaye in the starting lineup, we still shipped in another five. I mean, give him credit, he was probably one of our best players on the day. But one man can't stop a sinking ship. He has had a nightmare. There was nothing he could do about that deflection. I jest. He's had two nightmares against the same club. Ironically, the club that we've been trying to buy him.
So, to be clear, you're not suggesting it's a conspiracy?
No, it's just a really unfortunate coincidence. One that I'm sure he would have gone home and gone, that's not okay.
I mean, I thought he had...
It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3, while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Five-star performance.
Moving on. We all know what happened from that point, don't we? 4-0 by half-time, bit like the Man City game. It got out of our control far too quickly. Two goals scored in first half injury time, the opposite to what you want going into that tunnel. And then at half-time, I started questioning my life choices. Palace were moving like they'd just woken up from a deep nap. And the Real Madrid and Arsenal game was on the other channel.
Yeah.
Tempting me like the last slice of pizza after a salad. But I stuck at it, right? And I guess the positives were that we only shipped in one more goal by a full time, right? So 4-0 half time, 5-0 full time. We've got to look at the positives.
I love that. I love the fact we only shipped in one more goal, number five. Mate, so can I just I'm just trying to remember. Hang on a sec.
Yeah.
So that was five goals. And remind me, what was the game against City score again?
It was 5-2. Well, it was 5-2, but on that one, we went 2-0 up, you see. So we did all right in the first bit of that.
Yeah, cool. So that was 10 goals in a week, less than a week.
Mm. Yeah. And 10 goals in a week away from home, 19 goals in a season away from home prior to these two games.
Oh, you even said that last week, I think. You were boasting about what a fantastic defensive performance they are away from home.
Don't know if you can boast if it's factual, but I mean, I gave you the stats. Look, not ideal. We were simply outplayed by a better team who were, it pains me to say, on that day, brilliant.
Yeah.
If they play like that next season, I think they're going to be challenging. The stats show that we did have our chances. We had 28 touches in the opposition box. 28 touches in the opposition box, yet no goals to show for it whatsoever. Newcastle had 17 and got 5 goals out of it. I think we weren't 100% committing. Maybe we had our eye on the FA Cup coming up. And then the worst thing about this whole situation...
It gets worse.
Oh, mate, it gets so much worse.
Go on.
I'm sat there with my hands on my face, as I say, contemplating my life choices, celebrating myself that I didn't turn over to watch the European game. And then, what do I hear? After the 5-0 thrashing, the DJ at St James's Park hit play on Glad All Over. Why not rub salt into the wounds and add a soundtrack to my misery? Honestly, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
Yeah, you can. Go for it.
Absolute.
That's proper trolling, isn't it? I just thought that was so harsh. So harsh. I was here for it. I loved it. But at the same time, yeah, that was harsh.
I mean, I was livid, but also, you're absolutely right. I kind of, you know, you've got to give them the credit there because that was something quite special for them.
Sure.
Anyway, there we go. So that was the Newcastle game, all in the past. So, Neil, cheer us all up and tell us what happened. What was it, Albion Brentford?
Yeah, thanks, Andy. There was a moment today before we started this podcast where I was tempted just to re-edit last week's podcast and just change, overdub the word Leicester every time I said the word Leicester to Brentford.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a little bit like that. I think the first thing to say was that I don't think there were any real big surprises with the lineup. The only one that was a slight question mark was the constant question mark we have around who's going to play right back. The choice, the lucky winner this time was Mats Wiefer, who, when we saw the lineup, I actually thought might be playing in midfield, his actual position, next to Carlos Baleba. But no, he was going to play right back, and they moved Jack Inchelwood, who is, yes, quite rightly, a midfielder by trade initially, but as we all know, has played right back for quite a long time over the last two seasons. He played in the middle of the field. It is what it is. They're having to try and make sure that certain players play certain places. You know, I get the fact that there isn't a right back in the club that's fit currently, as I keep talking about every week. So it is what it is. We started okay. We started very similar, as I said, to the Leicester game. Mm. We had all of the possession, and most of the game we ended up with mid 50s, almost 60% possession of the whole game anyway. And that's a symptom of how we try and control games. But I don't think, and I think probably a lot of people would now start to agree with me, as we've seen over this season more than other seasons, I don't think possession's necessarily important anymore in the way that...
It certainly doesn't win games, Neil.
Not anymore. No. I think there's so many now, wonderful teams out there that can counter-attack and can go at speed, that the ball, having the ball for a long length of time isn't necessarily the way to go. And for Brighton at the moment, we were in a position where, very like all the other weeks in the last sort of few weeks, we had the ball, but we were doing nothing with it. Passing it around, passing it, trying to encroach into Brentford's half as much as possible, getting to the last third of the pitch, and suddenly nothing. Nothing would happen. We wouldn't get anywhere. We'd lose the ball and the ball would turn over, and guess what would happen? Brentford, with their unbelievably fast players, their one-touch passing, it literally took 9 minutes. 9 minutes for Mbeumo to score. And as I said, you know, as you can guess, counter-attacking goal. Oh, and oh, where was Dunk? Oh, in midfield, marking the other striker. That's right. So literally like last week.
They are impressive, though, right? On the counter, Brentford, the pace of which they get the ball from one end to the other.
Andy, you know that.
Yeah.
I know that. Nearly everybody that watches any football in the Premier League know that. Yet we still chose to play the way we chose to play. And that's the frustration that I alluded to last week.
Yeah.
That we are still trying to play the same way. And I get the concept of a new manager wanting to instill, you know, it's the whole Ruben Amorim conversation. It's the Ange Postecoglou conversation of our managers wanting to play the way they play so the players get used to it. I understand that. But I don't believe that that should be for the... Well, I just don't believe that that should cost us every single point in the, from now until the end of the season, just because we haven't got the players that need to play that. You know. Anyway, look, I'm not going to keep going on about it. My point being that literally within the first 10 minutes, we'd lost a goal to the counter-attacking. Dunk was in midfield. Our fullbacks, I think at least one of them, I think Wefa was halfway up into midfield. There was literally two defenders back and Mbeumo straight through the middle, one pass, job done. For the rest of that half, we didn't really cause them any problems. We had the ball, yes, we moved it around a lot. We looked very pretty, but not much happened. It got to right before the end of the first half. And I, you know, apart from Welbeck being clever and using his experience and strength to get on the end of a cross, and put his head to it and getting in the back of the net, really, we hadn't really caused Brentford any problems. And that was the frustration. Yes, we were lucky, in my opinion, to get to the half-time at 1-1. You know, I'm pleased for Welbeck. He's got a lot of goals this season now, and I'm sure, Andy, you've got a stat for that, knowing you.
I actually have. Welbeck scored his 9th Premier League goal in the season, joint best return in a campaign in the competition, along with 2011 and 2013.
There you go, you see. So, you know, only one more goal and it's his best ever season. So, you know, for him, I'm really pleased. And it was a great finish for him. From my point of view, you know, I felt though we were lucky to go in at 1-1. But saying that, I was thinking to myself, well, I'll take a bit of luck. You know, I'll take that. The way we're playing at the moment, let's see if we can keep lucky and get a point out of this.
Yeah.
Well, my joy didn't last very long. Second half, we come out and, I mean, it was literally the same as the first. You know, we got caught playing out from the back this time. I think it was 48 minutes, like literally 3 minutes from kickoff again. And then 10, 15 minutes later, before even the hour was up, Wissler had scored on a counter-attack, Andy. Who would have thought it? We were up the other end. Our left-back was on the left wing, past our left-winger, and they attacked down where the hole of the full-back was, and there was no midfielder to chase back. So 3-1 before the hour, and we are not happy, obviously. But the performance, to be fair... I mean, yes, Brentford took their chances. They didn't have many chances, but they took the ones they had. Mm. And we didn't deserve anything more than that at that moment. I felt, you know, very much like this is just Groundhog Day, as I said earlier. And then the moment that probably sealed our fate completely was João Pedro and his petulance, from my perspective. 60 minutes around that time, just literally a couple of minutes after the third goal went in for Brentford. I'm sure everyone's seen it. I won't go into it too much, but essentially, you know, João Pedro's got annoyed by some close marking, flung his arm out and a leg as well. And the defender, quite rightly, has gone down making a meal of it, like anybody else would. And I was talking to some of my friends on WhatsApp during the game, like we all do. And I'd said that that red card has probably been coming for about 3 or 4 weeks. Been watching João Pedro get more and more frustrated in the last few games. And he's getting frustrated either with other players or with himself, I'm not sure. But you could see his frustration. And today, on Saturday, it just felt like this was the culmination of all that frustration come out. And he knew as soon as he'd done it, I think you could see it in his face. No arguments whatsoever, red card, get off the pitch. And it just annoyed the hell out of me because... You know, it's things like that that have a real knock-on effect. He's going to miss games now because of that, you know. And it's okay to get frustrated, we all do. But doing something like that then has an effect on everyone else around you, from my point of view, is really, really frustrating. And I'm sure Fabian Hürsler will we'll have a word with him. But still, it was a real frustration for all of us. And for to get a get out of jail free card and just get off the pitch as quick as possible, for me was, yeah, a little bit short-sighted and really frustrating to watch. Fabian Hertzler did make a few changes. And I think the one that the fans, especially that were there, didn't like, 77th minute, I think it was around there anyway, Welbeck was taken off. Our only striker, because obviously João Pedro went off, Jorginho Rutter's injured. So he took Welbeck off at 3-1. Very much making the decision, I would suggest, that we've had enough of this game, we'll just have to save him for next week. And I understand that. Welbeck is our only fit striker or not suspended striker now, with João Pedro getting the red card. So let's try and save his legs and worry about a game that maybe we could win. I don't think the fans that were there were enjoying that. I did hear a few boos in the crowd. And also, when they saw who was coming on, they were happy. I think Matoma came on, Solly March came on. He changed the structure slightly. He changed the way we played slightly, mainly because we didn't have any. We only had 10 players, obviously, but we didn't play with a striker. We played with the two wingers sort of cutting in.
Okay.
And more players in midfield because of that. And actually, for the next sort of 10 minutes, it actually made a big difference. We suddenly saw Brighton able to get on the ball, able to make quick, short passes through the lines of defence. And it was an interesting watch from a tactical point of view, because although, yes, Brentford were, obviously trying to defend a lead, they weren't trying to attack necessarily. But Brighton, rather than just having possession for possession's sake like they did for the first hour or so, they actually made some incisive passing. And they were passing very quickly, one touch. And that was mainly because they had more midfielders. They had more players closer together.
Yeah.
And it made a real difference. Now, I'm sure it's not going to be suddenly something they want to do again, because I don't feel like Fabian Hertzler is going to suddenly change his style. But he made that decision at that moment, did it? And actually, we played pretty good football for, yes, I appreciate, just 10 minutes. But we did. Anyway, we got to the point where Kara Matoma did put the ball in the back of the net right near the end of the game. But after that, we tried. We put Jean-Paul Van Heck went up to sort of play up front for the last sort of 5-6 minutes. But nothing really came of it. We had a few of the odd chances here and there. But ultimately, we didn't deserve any points from the game, really. We got close near the end by luck and by just pure effort. But we didn't really deserve anything. It was a very frustrating game. I do have to just make one point, which is JP Van Heck, he did have a really nasty clash of heads.
He got stretched off, didn't he?
He did. Proper stretched off with oxygen and the whole thing. It looked really bad at one point. I think a lot of us were really worried. But I know they did, the club did tweet a few hours later that he was back home safe. He'd been discharged from hospital. He was okay. And now, who knows what happens for the next fixture? He may, I would imagine if it was something that bad, he probably won't turn up next week, but we'll see. I think the thing that I was thinking about was, as I mentioned earlier, overall, I think I probably could have just cut and pasted last week's review and comments, especially about the amount of possession and the way that, teams counterattack against us. Ultimately, our defensive line is almost non-existent when we're pushing up so high with our fullbacks so high, and we're left with Lewis Dunk and Van Heck on their own with no real pace trying to defend. And it's a frustration watching it week in, week out at the moment. So when you get to these situations where you've got, little choice to make a change, sometimes those changes that force your hand work for you. And I'm trying to stay positive to think, actually, maybe we might see a change of shape next week. We've got a hell of a lot of midfielders. Maybe we should play more midfielders in midfield. There might be a few things we could do to be different. Let's talk about more of that maybe at the end when we go through our Winging It session.
Absolutely. Well, double game week, as I said, for Crystal Palace. We move on now to potentially one of the most boring games I've ever witnessed. Drove all the way up to London to sit there I'm decorating my house at the moment, and I would have much preferred to watch the paint in my hallway dry than watch this one again. It was Crystal Palace 0, Bournemouth 0. Lineups wise, Walton and Hughes were chosen in midfield over Lerma and Kamada, but apart from that, completely unchanged. Nil, it wasn't pretty and it wasn't fun to watch. We looked a bit shaky from the off, which is understandable. Henderson, again, early doors, kept us in the game with a good save from a tight angle. Eze was gifted a few free kicks in the first half, which he stood and observed and pondered about and then absolutely mucked up and wasted every single one of them. Getting a bit fed up with him taking the free kicks. When he does take them and score them, he's the hero, but it's far and few between, and this is the issue. But I need to stop hating on Eze because I do love him too. Palace fans grew frustrated as you slipped back into the same way that we played at the start of this season. And I don't know if you remember, we didn't have the best of starts, right? We got on that horrible run where we just couldn't get a win. And a little bit like you, without kind of trying to slip into this kind of wallowing of self-pity, but like we lose the ball in midfield with sloppy passes. We then have to battle and press, and it's so hard to get the ball back. Take 5 minutes to get that ball back in midfield. When we do, we then pass it sideways in our own half, back to the keeper eventually because there's no way through, who then plays a long ball into their half. We then lose possession and the whole thing starts again. And that was pretty much repeat over and over again.
Can I ask you a quick question, Andy?
Yeah.
When Oliver Glasner first came in, 2 seasons ago almost now, that end of season where he came in after Hodgson, they looked amazing.
Yeah.
They were incisive. They were quick. I appreciate Olise was there, but you know, majority of the forward players plus the midfield are still there. They looked like a team that were going to go and attack a lot, be free to attack. And more importantly, as you were just saying there, the opposite of what you were just saying there, they passed quickly and incisively. So what's changed?
I think for some unknown reason, I mean, yeah, I was just getting to this a little bit, actually, because when we're not playing well, we slip back into our old habits. And look, Roy Hodgson was great for us and he did a really good job for us. He saved us many a time, but it wasn't the most attractive football. There was lots of long balls, and I think that, yeah, on a day like Saturday, when we're struggling for form a little bit, we're feeling a bit shaky, we've not got our confidence, I think we go back to that whole long ball, long throw-ins, which never work.
Right.
Everyone sat around me was just getting so frustrated with Lerma trying to do the long throw-in into the box. And even after Mateta got subbed off, Eddie Nketiah comes on, who's one of the smallest footballers there is, and we're still trying to play long ball to a man who's not even up to the shoulders of the defender he stood next to. We're never going to win it. I think the old us, the end of last season when we were literally unbeatable, we were playing the wings. We had Munez and Mitchell on each wing. Obviously, back in the day when Glasner first came in, we had Eze Olise in there. Now, obviously, Elise's gone. Saar has hit form of recent, which is why I think we're starting to kind of start to get them results through. And obviously, Mateta has hit form. So I think we've got into the habit now of trying to get the ball to Mateta, thinking he's going to solve all of our problems.
Right.
But we seem to get stuck in that midfield bit. The defenders are surging forward. They're getting the ball into midfield, but we seem to be getting a block from midfield to... It's that support in the attack. We're getting too easily beaten on the wings, and that was shown. And I think Mitchell isn't having a great time at the moment. He was getting schooled, actually, on the wings at the weekend. He was one of the biggest culprits on the sloppy passes. And it's just that frustrating thing, isn't it? You've spent 5 minutes getting the ball back and you just lose it so easily.
Yeah.
And I think it was like too many defensive clearances to no one. And that's why my kind of Roy Hodgson analogy came back, which was the whole defenders trying so hard to get the ball off the opposition, which they do. And we did really well, actually. Mm. We stopped them. We stopped Bournemouth, who are a good team.
Absolutely.
Breaking us down, especially when we had 10 men in the second half. However, as soon as we got the ball back, it was lump it up to no one. It was a frustrating watch. I think that it was mostly caused by our good friend and referee, Samuel Barrett.
Yes, yes.
Now, I don't know if you remember, Samuel Barrett had already got into the controversy with Crystal Palace back in August.
Oh, right.
When Eze scored that unbelievable free kick into the top corner, where he blew the whistle just before it.
Oh.
Well, just after he kicked it, just before he kicked it, whatever the controversy was. And we actually got an apology from him after the game to say that actually he shouldn't have done that, you know, however it played out. But I think this game was, he had a nightmare. And I'm not for bashing referees. I know you called out a referee the other day, and I don't want this podcast to kind of turn into ref bashing.
No, they've got a difficult job, but sometimes you do have to call out when someone's...
Yeah, and I think the media this week has... A lot of ex-referees and big people in the industry have all kind of said, actually, he has not had a good game here. Richards got given a second yellow card before half-time for what can only be described as the light tug, truthfully. I'm not, there was plenty of yellow cards flying around, which were absolutely well-deserved, but Cliver made the most of it. It was soft, and in my opinion, neither of Richards' yellow cards were actually yellow cards. I think they would have been... a blow on the whistle.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't see much of the game, but I did look on Match of the Day, and obviously, therefore, I got to see the main points of the low lights, as I called it, as it was such a 0-0. But I did see that yellow card, and I did see the pull on Clivert. As a sort of neutral, I do see it from both sides, that I can see why he gave the yellow card, but it was very light. There was a foul just before that, the other way round.
Alex Scott.
That's
and
right.
This is my problem, Neil.
Yeah. When I saw that and the fact that the ref didn't give a yellow card for it, which was a similar thing where Alex Scott made sure that, you know, the attacker didn't get any further. He was doing it with his feet, whereas obviously Richards was doing it with his hand. And I'm wondering whether that was the only real difference as to why one got a yellow card or the other. For me, it shouldn't be any different. They both purposefully tried to stop the other player. So for me, they both should be yellow cards. Having said that, I think we all can understand that, you know, the spirit of the game. And when you see a player on a yellow card does that, which is light, let's say, a bit lightweight, I'm very surprised the referee gave a second yellow for that.
Neil, he made, and this is my beef with this, he made the decision to change the game.
Yeah.
And that was that. And this is what is one of my biggest problems with the way that, you know, VAR can't kind of influence yellow cards.
Yeah.
But yet two yellow cards can heavily influence a game,
yep,
which can't be undone. And it's happened a couple of times to us this season. And I think, granted, like there's no smoke without fire. However, Richards wasn't the last man. There was still another defender there. It was a two-way tussle. And as I say, only 10 minutes before, there could have been a yellow card and he decided there wasn't one. Look, there were 23 fouls committed in that game.
Mm.
And there were 7 yellow cards and 1 red card. He was dishing them out like confetti at a wedding, Neil.
Yeah.
It was honestly, it was absolutely ridiculous. He lost control. And I think both sides of fans were both chanting, "You don't know what you're doing."
Yeah.
And when you're at a game where, you know, both sides are doing that, you know you got problems. He did lose control. And actually, if Richards hadn't have gone off, I'm not saying we would have won the game, but it certainly wouldn't have been as boring as it was.
Yeah.
And I think something would have happened. The other thing that really, really amused me was something, you know, I like these moments that aren't necessarily about the game itself, but the stuff that happens.
Absolutely.
It's where Saar gets his pants pulled down, literally. Straight after the second half, Clivert fouled Munez. And there was a bit of a tussle. There was plenty of tussles. Now, Cliver tried to play the free kick quickly, and Saar was having none of it. And as they do to try and stop play, he kind of stood there. Now, what Cliver does is then, literally, as he gets up off the floor, he pulls Saar's shorts all the way down to his ankles. So if you can imagine, and please do Google this if you're listening at home, like, Saar then is stood there with his hands up with the "what's going on" pose, staring at the referee in his pants with his shorts down by his ankles, looking at the ref, wondering what's going on. absolutely priceless. So look, what are the positives of this game? Lacroix was my man of the match. I think he looked really, really good. He kept us in it. He had 15 defensive actions on the pitch, 10 clearances, won three of his four duels. I think he was back on form today, which was great. I think we kept Scott and Semedo out of harm's way. And whilst they did make us look like schoolboys, specifically a few of our players on the wings, we didn't let them concede. And that is my point, which is that we didn't concede any goals. 10 goals in two games, no goals in this game. And that is the biggest win for me. Hopefully a reset before Arsenal and Villa, two games which we kind of want to win.
And that is where we're going to leave it for now. Thanks, Andy. That's the end of part one, guys. We're going to be back in a few moments. Welcome back. This is Seagull Eagle Podcast. When you look at the league positions now, there's a little bit of a gap between the Premier League and Europa League spots, i.e. the top six, seven spots. And then that eighth position, which could be a Conference League spot. There's so many teams involved in that opportunity that I thought it would make sense for us to have a bit of a chat and look at the fixtures that everyone's got and go through it. What do you think?
Absolutely. It's going to be close. Although, Neil, I to be honest, it's a lovely idea and everything, but Palace have kind of already got their European slot sealed in the FA Cup, right? Europa League, here we come. See. However, let's just look at this as a bit of a backup plan for us.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Yeah, okay. So there's a lot to talk about, lots of different connotations, but essentially, just remember this. There is a very good chance currently that eighth place in the Premier League will be a Conference League European spot. Therefore, let's look at the teams that have the opportunity to finish eighth.
Well, yeah. So we've got Bournemouth, Fulham, Brentford, Brighton.
Yay.
And hanging on in there just about is Palace.
Just
about. But as I say, this is our backup plan.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Okay, so let's go through them then. So each one of these teams has five fixtures left.
Yep.
And they've all got very varying different fixtures as to ease and complexity, I think, when we looked at them, didn't we?
I mean, Neil, I think my first observation on this before we go into any more detail is that I don't think any of them five teams have got what I would class as an easy run.
No, I agree.
I think that the fixture list has kind of given us a bit of an exciting end there.
Yeah.
In that respect. I mean, where do you want to start? With Bournemouth?
Yeah, I think so. Let's go through them. So let's go through Bournemouth first. Let's talk about them. So they finished this week on 49 points.
Yeah.
That's week 33. And they've got, as I said, five fixtures like everybody else has got. Let's talk about who they've got. So they've got Manchester United at home. Then they've got Arsenal away. Then they've got Villa at home. And then they've got Manchester City away until they finish at Leicester at home. Sorry.
I can only allude to the fact that, make the most of the glory days whilst they're there. I mean, I just don't mean to be horrible to them or anything like that, but I just can't see them picking up points.
Okay,
apart from that last game, really. Maybe a draw at Man United.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that then. So in my prediction, I looked at that and said, right, so Manchester United at home. So I think they'll beat Manchester United personally. I think that's their first home banker, because I think Man United are so poor, they'll beat them. What do you think?
I said it was going to be a draw.
Okay. Arsenal away, maybe a point if we're being lucky?
No. Okay. I think Arsenal will do them over.
Yeah, okay. So I think Villa at home, I think they might scrape a point. I'm trying to stay positive here for them.
I'm not. I don't think they'll get anything out of Villa.
And then Man City away. Again, I'm trying to be positive. Maybe they scrape a point.
No, I feel like Man City's troubles are over now. I think they're back on it.
You got no
so
faith.
From my perspective, it's 3 points at Leicester and a draw at Man United.
Well, we can both agree on the 3 points at Leicester at least. Okay, that's fair. So from my point of view, I think that means that they finish on 58 points. You're saying 53 points. Okay.
Yeah.
Fulham. Let's talk about Fulham. So again, they finished the week on 48 points, 1 point behind Bournemouth. And then their fixtures, the next five fixtures are Southampton away, Villa away,
Everton at home, Brentford away, finishing with Man City at home. I mean, talk about either end of the scale here. So Southampton away, I think we can probably both agree.
Well, 3 points.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I think it gets tricky for them at Villa, from my perspective.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're going to get anything there.
I think they'll get a win at Everton.
Right, okay. Do you know what? I'll agree with you, actually. Yeah, 3 points at Everton. Okay.
And then I think Brentford, they get nothing, from my perspective.
I think they'll beat Brentford. And the reason I do is just because by that point, they'll know what they've got to do. And I think Brentford might be out of it by then. But we'll see, won't we? But yeah, I reckon they'll win against Brentford. You reckon nothing?
Yeah, and then nothing for Man City. I think our views change significantly on this one when it comes to Brentford, which is interesting.
Yeah, see, I'm trying to stay positive and think that Fulham get a point at Man City. But, I mean, you don't think I'm right there, do you?
I just can't see it. I think Man City will finish strong at the end of the season. And I think our views differ when it comes to Brentford's run in, which we'll get to later. I think they're probably going to do a little bit better than what you may think, but let's see.
Okay, so going on those results then, that means Fulham, you think they're going to finish... Sorry, I think they're going to finish on 58 points. You think 54 points, which is a bit of a difference. Okay, let's go with friend... Well, actually, let's talk about Brentford next then. So at the moment, they finished the week on 46 points. Their fixtures, their last five fixtures, they go away to Nottingham Forest. Then they're at home to Manchester United. Then they're away to Ipswich. Then they're at home to Fulham, as we talked about. And then they're away to Wolves. So actually, there's some real winnable games in there.
Well, and this is why, without ruining this whole fixture and kind of showing my cards too early, this is why they are my favourites on this one.
Really?
And why I do believe that they might win this battle. Because I think, as a Palace fan, if I could pick any of them fixture lists coming up, I probably would have picked that one. I think that Nottingham Forest will get the better of them. I do believe that.
Yeah, me too.
In that first fixture, I think they get nothing out of that. Man United, I think they'll get a point as a minimum.
Oh, I think they'll win it, but yeah, go on.
So that was my thoughts, which was they get a point at Man United, they go to Ipswich and predictably probably get the 3 points. What's your view?
Yeah, I agree, totally.
Then Fulham, I think this is the one for me. It's like I've put them down for a win at Fulham. Now, obviously, it's between that whole kind of Man United and Fulham, which where they pick up the points. But I put 3 points down for Fulham. Whatever you put them down, you put Fulham.
No, so that was me thinking. Yeah, as I said before, I reckon Fulham will beat Brentford, but yeah. I can see both sides. I think I think for either team, what's no good is a draw. So they will go for it, both teams.
You're absolutely right.
And I just feel like Fulham might do them at the end.
And then, of course, we've got Wolves, where I've said that Brentford will pick up 3 points. But Wolves are one of them teams at the moment where you just don't quite know what you're going to get.
I think the other thing to consider is, as we move on to the other fixtures, are those end of season games, you never know what team's going to turn up, as you just said. And also you don't know what's going to be on it for those teams that are involved, which is a good point to then talk about. Well, let's go Brighton next. So they've ended the week on 48 points.
Mm.
Then last five fixtures. We've got West Ham at home next week. Newcastle at home. Wolves away. Liverpool at home. And we end at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah. Something tells me you might be a little bit more optimistic about this than I am.
I'm trying to be. I'm trying to stay positive because I've felt really negative talking about the games the last couple of weeks. And I'm trying to stay positive. I'm hopeful. Well, look at it this way. The West Ham game is next. The way West Ham are playing, they're awful as well at the moment. They're not really playing very well. As we've alluded to, the fans are booing. Graham Potter's under a lot of pressure. He's coming back to the Amex where there is no love lost between us and Graham Potter because of the way he left.
Mm-hmm.
He did a good job for us, actually. And if he'd left in a different way, there would have been a lot of respect. But there's not. So he's going to feel the heat when he comes to the Amex. So I'm hopeful that we will get the 3 points on Saturday.
I think you will.
Good.
And I'm hopeful that that may work as a bit of a catalyst and actually help us stay more positive. That's what I'm trying to cling on to at the moment. So my predictions are, as we said, West Ham, 3 points, and you agree. Then we've got Newcastle at home, and I totally accept the fact that I'm not expecting much from that. So
I think that's an understatement, Neil. I'm going to level with you. I mean, listening to your woes about your defensive issues in a defensive way, I believe that you're going to get destroyed by Newcastle in a similar guise to the way that Palace did. And that's not being horrible, because we've just been destroyed by them ourselves. But I can't see that ending well.
I agree that I don't think we'll have any points. I'm very hopeful that we won't get destroyed, put it that way, because I think then the season is over. But if we can at least come out of that with a bit of dignity, then we go to Wolves away. I'm looking forward to that because I've got my tickets for that as well. So I'm going to love an away day.
So what do you think that one's going to be?
I think we'll win that one.
I've got you down for a draw.
Have you?
And I'll tell you why, because the Wolves' form is very unpredictable. In fact, all of these, like, all of these mid-table teams, and obviously there's these five teams in this as well, if you have a look at their form guide with the whole kind of green, red, amber situation, there isn't anyone really that is kind of on the up and soaring. It's very all over the place. It's really hard to try and get a... You think you've kind of worked a team out and all of a sudden they'll come back and bounce back. So, but I do... Yeah, I think the Wolves game, I'm just going for a draw because I've got a feeling that I think they are on the up at the moment. And if they continue their trajectory, then they're going to get a point out of you.
The way I'm looking at it is Albion need something if we're going to qualify. We're going to have to win games. We've got to go for it. And I'm trying to stay positive thinking Wolves don't have anything on it. So when it comes to the last 10, 15 minutes of the game, we have got to go for it. Now, let's be honest. That hasn't worked out well for us in the last few weeks. Counter-attacking, you know, we have all the ball and then counter-attacking against us has not worked. And I know this is a stretch, but I'm hopeful that we'll get 3 points at Wolves, which then leads us to Liverpool at home. Now, hang on before you start smirking at me.
Too late.
I think we could win against Liverpool. And yes, I am putting this, I am putting this out there. I am doing this. And the reason I think this is twofold. One, Liverpool always want the ball and they will attack. There's no defence with Liverpool in that sense. They want to have the ball and they want to attack. We always play better against teams that want to actually attack as well. So there's a chance straight away anyway. Second of all, by then, if not by next weekend, Liverpool will have won the Premier League. They will be on the beach. They will be hungover, hopefully. They will be full of the joys of spring and looking forward to going on their holidays.
What do you think they're going to put the youth team out then for the last couple of fixtures?
I wouldn't be surprised if there will be a few players that need to get a certain number of appearances to get their Premier League medals.
Okay.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they're the last two or three fixtures for Liverpool, there are some results that aren't usual for the season that they've had. And I would expect Liverpool not to win their last three games. Something else to happen. Maybe a few points dropped here or there. And I'm hopeful, therefore, that Brighton could be on the receiving end of that and get 3 points against Liverpool. Stop smirking.
It's all right. You wait till you get to mine. But yeah, no, I don't think you're going to get anything out of that. And I think it's the complete... From my perspective, it's actually the complete opposite to what you've just said. But certainly when you were talking about the Wolves game just now, I think that you will go hell for leather and attack, and I think you're going to be exposed as and when you do. And I think these teams that you've got coming up are going to see you come in. But, you know, happy to be proved wrong, mate. I really am.
All I can say at the moment is this is my faith in Brighton, blind faith that we all have, don't we, as supporters. Last game of the season, we are at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I'm going with 3 points again. And again, similar thing. They are already on the beach, apart from their European games. They've had a terrible season. And if memory strikes me, if they do get to the final, that final is right around that last fixture. So there are going to be a lot of people that are distracted. So I'm very hopeful that we can get something out of that one.
Yeah, there could be resting people or, you know, or, yeah. Do you know, I mean, I didn't think about that. I put down that I think you're probably at best going to get a point out of that. But again, it's sort of calling what Tottenham side turn up in it.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, flip a coin.
Okay.
So I've got you down on 53 points.
53, yeah. So I've got, yeah, big difference.
I've got
a feeling that you might be a Palace fan and I might be an Albion fan out of this one. So I've got Albion finishing on 60.60.
So top of the tree, yeah.
That's currently top of the tree of my predictions, yeah.
That's also optimistic.
It's very optimistic. And I am trying to stay positive, hence these predictions. Okay, let's get to it then. Crystal Palace finished the week this week on 44 points in, what position are they in currently?
12.
12!
Which is funny enough where I've put Brighton to finish,
right.
Which is interesting. So let's just see how it all plays out. But yeah, I've got us, let's go through the fixtures.
Yeah, sure.
We've got Arsenal coming up midweek.
And where's that?
It's away at Arsenal. Right. And last time we were away at Arsenal was in the League Cup. I was actually there at the Emirates. Wonderful stadium, actually. Quite an architectural feat. However, after going 1-0 up there in the League Cup, it all went remarkably wrong for us. And I'm not looking forward to us going back there. I'm really not. I don't think we're going to get anything out of that game.
Okay, fair enough.
Realistic, right? Nothing down for that game for me.
Well, I think Crystal Palace are going to get a point at Arsenal. I know that might surprise you. But I actually think they might get a point because I think Arsenal now are starting to just concentrate on the Champions League. I appreciate they've just beaten Ipswich 4-0,
yeah.
But I think a midweek game after the trials and tribulations that they've had over the last two or three games of midweek game after midweek game, I think that might catch up with them, and I think they might drop a little bit of tiredness into that game. So I reckon actually Palace might get a point in that one.
Okay, moving on now to game week 35. It moves on to Nottingham Forest.
Mm.
Again, I don't. It's not the kindest of fixture list for us coming in here, and I think at home we'll get a point out of them. In my mind, imagine us now. We're having a nightmare, and it's just starting to come good for us. So yeah. I think we've got nothing out of Arsenal potentially, but haven't lost badly. We've got Nottingham Forest coming to us at home and we're getting a draw. That's where I'm at.
I think, looking at it, I think Nottingham Forest are slightly faltering. I think they're worried about dropping out of the Champions League after being the whole season in there. I still think, though, they're going to go for it. They've got Tottenham first before that. And I think if they win against Tottenham, they'll be cock-a-hoot, to use an old phrase.
Ooh,
I know.
Traditional.
And I think they'll really go for it. I can't see Palace getting anything out of that, actually. I think they're going to lose. So I think Palace 3 points on that one.
Wow.
Sorry, Forest 3 points. God, I almost gave you away there.
I'll take the latter, though. That's fine. And then we move on to Tottenham away. Now, I've bravely decided, Neil, that this is the point where it all comes good again.
Oh, really?
Where Palace end up on that end of season romp where they're just destroying people like they did at the end of last season. Everyone fears us. We're in the FA Cup final. Everything's flying high. Tottenham lose to Palace at home.
Let's be serious for a second. They don't need to be on the top of the game to beat Tottenham Hotspur at the moment.
No.
Where is the game? Is it at home or is it away?
No, it's at their home. So it's away.
Right, okay. Palace need it. Tottenham don't. I think for the same reason that I think Brighton could get 3 points, I'm going to agree with you that I think Palace could get 3 points there, absolutely. Not for the same reasons that they're going to be amazing and playing well. I just think Tottenham are that bad that most teams could get 3 points there at the moment.
I mean, this is a tricky one, Neil, because at this point, also, we have to bear in mind that this list of five could very easily go down to a list of three by this point or so on.
Yeah.
People can very easily rule themselves out at these stages, so it's difficult. But the next game, Wolves at home for Palace, and I've put down that it's going to come good for us. We're going to continue our run and get the 3 points.
Okay. I mean, I tend to agree with you. I'm just starting to see a pattern here, though, Andy.
What's that?
Your positivity that you were mocking me for. So we've both got Wolves. We've both got Tottenham in the last three fixtures. What's the last fixture, Andy? You've got?
Oh, Mate, I take no qualms about it. I'm saying that we will beat Liverpool on the last game of the season. As soon as...
And where is the game?
It's away.
Sorry, so on the last day of the season,
yep.
Liverpool winning the Premier League...
But they already won it by then.
But that's my point.
So, yeah.
And they're at Anfield, at home. They're just about to do the procession all the way around with the trophy and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they're going to let Palace beat them first.
We're not going to let... I mean, it's just going to happen.
Right.
I love the fact that... I mean, I've got a couple of good friends who are Liverpool supporters. So we've watched many of the games together.
Mm.
And history tells us that Palace tend to upset some of the end-of-season parties for Liverpool over the years. And I think that it's going to be a big task and it's going to be all according as to, for me, I don't think that, say, for example, if we don't win against Tottenham or Wolves, that's not happening. But if we can get ourselves back on our run, then I do believe if we've got something to play for and Liverpool potentially don't,
yeah.
then it's our party to ruin. And I think we would absolutely love to do that. Look at the run we went on at the end of last season for no apparent reason, still to finish in 12th.
But the reason you went on that run last season was because you had nothing to play for. The pressure was off.
Mm.
If you're actually in position come the last day of the season to possibly get that Conference League spot in eighth, then the pressure is on. And that's a different game, in my opinion.
It is, mate. But look, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, look, I mean, it looks very familiar, this, because we're both being very positive about our teams. And to be fair... We should be.
There are teams. Neil, hang on. Whoa. Hold your horses, because I've done the maths here, mate, and I've worked out of this little league table we've done of five teams, I think I've worked out that you put Brighton at the top of that table in eighth.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? I mean, that is optimism. I've put, in mine, Brighton in 12th, taking Palace's normal position. I've put Palace in 10th, and I've put Brentford in 8th. So it goes Brentford, Fulham, Palace, Bournemouth, Brighton. I actually think that's a realistic finish to the season. Whether I've got the scores right or not and the way round it goes, I think a 10th position finish for Palace is actually a realistic thing. So what I am saying is I don't think, unless we win the FA Cup, we will end up in Europe. I'm being realistic, mate.
That's realistic. 10th position for
I'm
Palace.
Being realistic. You've got no defenders currently at your club.
Well, don't
you're
don't
on
deflect.
The world's worst form
don't
that you've ever been on.
Me.
And suddenly
I was talking about Palace.
And suddenly you think you're all of a sudden going to go on this amazing run as of next week.
And you think
and
you're going to
finish
get 9 points out of 9 for the last 3 fixtures and finish in your highest league position.
Yeah. Because actually I think we've got the best squad that we've ever had, Neil. And I think that's why, and we've hardly got an injury list, and we've got the FA Cup. The FA Cup will affect this in one way or another.
That's true.
I think if you're a Palace fan, apart from the two games where we absolutely just lost the plot, I think if we can get it to come good and not lose badly this week, then I do genuinely believe we're in for one of the strongest end of seasons we've ever had, and we deserve that.
Okay, fair enough. I will take on board your positivity, and I will therefore say to you, let's wait and see, shall we? Let's see what happens at the end. Overall, your predictions mean that in 12th position in the league, Brighton and Hove Albion.
By goal difference with Bournemouth.
Bournemouth in 11th, goal difference. 10th, their best ever performance, I believe. Crystal Palace, 9th, Fulham, and sneaking in from nowhere, Brentford get the 8th place and a possible Conference League position.
Yeah, and I think that's more realistic than Palace finishing in 10th, but I do genuinely believe that Brentford will finish in 8th. But what the only thing I actually genuinely really do care about? I'd love to go to Europe, but we're going to anyway with the FA Cup. The one thing that I do genuinely care about, which is going to happen, is that for the second season in a row, Palace will finish not only above Man United, but also above Brighton.
Fabian, please help. Don't let this happen. My predictions mean that I've got... Oh, let me just check who's in 12th. Crystal Palace finish in 12th. Then I've got Brentford in 11th. Bournemouth in 10th after our predictions. 9th is Fulham. Brighton 8th. Now, just to make a point there, the way the actual points totals work, there's not much in it. I think I've got Brighton 1 or 2 points ahead of everyone else, which I appreciate is completely completely over positivity, but that's the way it is, isn't it, with your own team. We both are obviously biased, but looking at the other fixtures, I think what's probably fair to say is this unpredictability from everyone in that sort of position from sort of 6th, 7th, 8th down to 12th is going to continue, let's be honest. And there is no real way of predicting what's going to happen. But what it does tell us is it's going to be really, really close.
It's going to be close. It's going to be exciting. And no one really knows what's going to happen unless we are better than this than we thought we were. And we will replay this at the end of the season to revisit. I wish everyone luck. I don't wish any harm on Brighton. I really don't. I just think that you are being very kind to your own team there. 12th place is going to be where you're going to be. You're going to take it off of us. And that's how it's going to finish. And I think, Neil, is this a good time to finish the end of part two?
Oh, totally. Absolutely. See you in a bit, guys.
Bye.
Oh, yes!
Right, I think it's time to look at the fixtures that we've got coming up this week. Now, Premier League-wise, Brighton face West Ham on Saturday. But before that, Palace have got the game that we talked about a little earlier, didn't we? They've got Arsenal, haven't they?
Yeah, we've got Arsenal away. No new injuries for us. However, thanks to the previous game, Richards is now suspended.
Of course, yeah.
So he joins that list of people who miss a game. I think that this is, as I said earlier, I think this is going to be a tough one. This is going to be more about how we play for me rather than the score. Mm. With that FA Cup semi-final coming up, which, by the way, listeners, we are going to do a special pod for that midweek. A bonus pod, because I feel like the importance of that game cannot be wrapped up in a way where we stick it at the end of a podcast. Don't you agree, Neil? It's so important.
I get the feeling you just wanted to do a bonus podcast, so I have to suffer another hour sitting here with you in a room.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we could do the same for... Oh, no, we can't.
Oh, there we go.
Not yet. Okay. Anyway, moving back then, I genuinely believe it's going to be how we play. I think potentially it's going to be a 2-1. No. Yeah, 2-1 loss to Palace.
Okay, so you reckon Arsenal will beat Palace at home?
Yeah.
That's not really a shock, is it?
No, but as long as we do it with dignity and we play well, I'm kind of okay with that. But don't get me wrong, I'd love to win. Look, Palace have won just 5 of the last 50 meetings with Arsenal, right? This is where my head's at now, with Palace conceding 13 goals in the last 3 meetings. Mm. It's never particularly ended well for us. Now, Arsenal have lost just 3 of their last 36 home matches. They've won 26 and drawn 7. Right, so them stats are not saying that Palace wander up there and get a result. Now, Arsenal's Gabriel Martinelli has scored 5 goals in his last 5 Premier League games against us,
really?
As well. While his 6 goals against the Eagles overall is the most against any opponent, so he's going to be up for it.
Wow, I get a sneaky feeling See, I'm slightly different. As I said a minute ago when we were talking about our predictions, I actually think Palace will get a point here. And the reason I think they'll get a point is because I think Arsenal will change their lineup. It'll be a midweek game. They've just played on a Sunday. And I think if you look at Martinelli for a start, he played the whole game at Real Madrid. He's played, I think, most of the game today on the Sunday as time of recording as well. So I think you might see a different lineup. So you might see Trossard and Nwaneri or something like that on either side, which means you might be in luck.
Oh, Neil, I do hope so. I really, really do hope so. But also the other big thing that's worrying me about this game is what's been reported in the media about Palace's recent dip of form is that, you know, we are normally that team that crunches in for the tackle, commits hard, all that kind of stuff. And it's felt in the last couple of games like we've kind of been pulling back on some of them challenges, right. And the media's kind of been reporting. And I think Alan Pardew, in his post-match analysis, was referring to this as well the other day about the players, whether they know they have or not, they've got that cup, that semi-final cup game in their head, and they don't want to miss it. It's the, you know, and I know it's embarrassing, isn't it? It's like, it's a semi-final, it's not even a final. We know that, but it's one of the biggest games that the club has had in a really, really long time. So my fear is that there's going to, you know, are we going to play with the intensity? Is that going to be in the back of their heads? I think that they'll be much better off getting a positive result out of this game and committing fully going into the next game with a win under their belt. But let's see. As I say, I don't think it's going to end well. I'd love it to, but I think it's going to be a 2-1 loss.
Fair enough.
What do you think about the Brighton-West Ham game then?
I mean, I alluded to it when we were talking in the predictions part. I'm going to stick by my guns. I think we will win. And the reason I think we will win is because if we don't, the season is over. I mean, it is, literally. I don't, you know, we've sort of gone through the last few weeks getting a little bit lucky with other results going our way. But I think we have to win. From a lineup point of view, obviously with JP Van Hek going off injured with that head injury, I don't expect to see him on the weekend. João Pedro suspended. I don't think it's going to be pretty on Saturday. You know, looking at the form guide, obviously we've got, I think in the last five games we've had, is it 2 draws, 3 losses? So literally 2 points from 5 games.
Yeah.
West Ham are equally as bad almost. I think they've got 3 draws and 2 losses. So there's not much between us in that sense. We talked about the hate that Graham Potter's getting at the moment and the frustration from their fans. That he's not going to like coming to the Albion, as I said earlier. So I think it's going to be ugly. I think it's going to be hard work. It's going to be frustrating at times, but I'm trying to stay positive, and I think we might scrape a win out of it.
Well, let's see. I mean, look, trying to be impartial about this, I do. It could very much go either way. Like you've got, as I say, you've got Graham Potter coming back, and I... You're saying he's not going to like coming back. My philosophy on that's slightly different. I think he's going to love coming back, and I think he's going to want a point to prove, especially because he's trying to prove a point to his own team right now,
yeah.
Who are hating him, or a lot of the fans are. I think it's going to be a really interesting one. I think it could go either way. Question is, though, have your problems got worse since last week, or have they got better? In my mind, they've got worse. Without gloating, it is factual, right? You've lost players that you had before, and you've not factually got any better than you did last week. The question is, are West Ham going to have the momentum to get a result against you? I don't know.
Oh, Andy, I don't say this very often, but you're talking so much sense. It's very frustrating. I'm going to stay positive.
Well, good on you. I actually do. To be fair, Neil, I do think you'll win. I'm just not convinced about it. It's a flick of coin for me. Genuinely believe that. But I do have you down for 3 points for that one. It's just, I'm struggling to believe it myself. I don't know. But let's see what happens.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I think we're going to end that there. And as you alluded to earlier, we're going to talk about the other big, big game for Palace at the end of the week.
Huge game.
We're going to do that on a separate bonus pod, because I think that deserves a little bit of a separate conversation about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a part one of 2 bonus pod, right? Because there'll have to be another one in a few weeks
as well. You reckon?
Yeah.
Oh, please, someone help me.
Well, look, that's a wrap for episode 3 of Seagull Eagle podcast. A big thanks for flying with us once again as we glided over the glory, flapped through the frustration, Neil, and pecked at all the football drama. Don't forget, we've got socials up and running now, so please do subscribe, drop us a review, and give us your comments on the pod, and spread the word to your fellow fans as well. Whether you're blue and white or red and blue, we'll be back next week with more match day madness. Until then, stay loud, stay proud, and remember, as always, the rivalry never dies, it just evolves. Catch you next time on Seagull Eagle.
Come on, Albion! Eagle!